Aaron Moss, a.k.a. Brother Head of the Headcast Network family of shows, and I want to welcome you to the Time Shifters Podcast. This podcast takes a fun look at the films of long past, recent past, and the almost present, as well as the events and news surrounding them. Your hosts, Christopher and Matt, would love to hear from you, and there are several ways to get in touch with them. Look for the Time Shifters Podcast group on Facebook, follow the two on Twitter. Christopher is at Time Shifters Pod, and Matt is at Movies at the Mat. Or you can send them a typed or recorded message to timeshifterspodcast@gmail.com. If you haven't already, you can subscribe to this wonderful show on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher Radio, and Spotify. Please rate and review the show at any of these outlets. Now, from the Time Shifter Studio, here are Christopher and Matt. Take it away, guys.
All right, everybody, welcome back. Matt, welcome.
Du jour means podcast.
Du jour means podcast. Yeah, we'll get into that. That is something we're definitely going to be talking about here in a little bit. Before we do, we need to talk a little bit about our last episode. We got an email from Pete again from the Good Beer, Bad Movie Night, Good Beer, Bad Movie Night podcast. He sent me this. I saw that he posted on Facebook that he was listening to the show, and like literally like 2 hours later, I got this email. he was quick on it. He was quick. He says, "Hey guys, man, I can't disagree with Matt more. Excluding the 'we're black and we're proud' cringeworthy comment, what this band was doing isn't cultural appropriation any more than what folks like Frank Sinatra, Nicki Yanofsky, or postmodern jukebox have done."
So then it is cultural appropriation. That's what it is.
"This is a cover band, and as a cover band, you play whatever you're good at to start building skills and growing an audience. I play in a horn band, and we cover what other artists, black and white, male and female, have done in the past. I don't feel we're stealing from others any more than Harry Connick Jr. has stolen from Count Basie. Now, I agree some of the things that folks like Pat Boone and Elvis Presley, specifically like Tutti Frutti, grossly stole from the original artists at the behest of their record labels, but most bands need to start out covering other artists to get a feel of what kind of sound they want to develop for the band. Bands also need to eat, so starting out covering other artists is the best way to go if you want to keep your belly full. This film was a very realistic peek behind the curtain of the life of a young band struggling to make a name for themselves. The violent arguments, sex, success, and failure they experience are all very real. However, all the above happening in the same band in a guesstimated 2 to 3 month period is definitely a Hollywood construct. Thanks for the show, guys. You're one of my favorites, Pete." Yeah, so other than the one line, he doesn't feel what they're actually doing was cultural appropriation.
I think doing covers is one thing. I think doing covers from all over is one thing. I think when the movie specifically targeted black culture, that's when you cross a line. I didn't define cultural appropriation. This is something that's out there. That's the part that made me cringe. The movie could have had a black cast. There's literally tens of thousands of black people in Dublin, Ireland, and even more people of color. The movie could have done things completely different. So it's just that whole idea of, oh, we're the blacks of Dublin. It's like, no, you're not. No, you're not. You don't have that history behind you. You don't have all of that racism behind you. You don't have all of that stigma behind you. You can't make a claim like that. And even if it is just one line, that to me, that's one line too many.
All right. All right, well, thank you very much for sending that in there, Pete. Now, we do have some news before we get into today's topic. Got a couple of things that I actually, I came up with a couple of things. This is something, this was a little bit before my time. I know of the Banana Splits, and I know that they were a children's program, and it's kind of one of those, it's another one of those programs almost in the line of H.R. Puff and stuff, where it's just that weird, it's like a Chuck E. Cheese band come to life kind of thing is what the Banana Splits. They were a music group, but they were animals.
Okay.
All right. Well, Warner Brothers Home Entertainment and Sci-Fi, the channel, are doing an original film based on the Banana Splits with a horror twist.
It's probably like the one way to get people to watch it.
Yeah. And the upcoming horror thriller, A Boy Named Harley and His Family, go to a taping of the Banana Splits TV show. And that's supposed to be a fun-filled birthday for young Harley. But things take an unexpected turn and the body count quickly rises. Can Harley, his mom, and their new pal safely escape? The banana splits Bingo, Flegel, Snorgy, and Drooper from the original series will appear. It's going to come out in stores and home video just before the actual television premiere on Sci-Fi. I think it's kind of interesting and kind of fun, the idea of taking like a beloved children's show and giving it a horror edge.
I'm looking at pictures of this show now, and that kind of writes itself as a horror.
Yeah. Yeah, I had to wonder if the people that are writing this were like really young kids, too young to really get the show and just have scary images of talking bears or whatever. And they're just like, that's what they're basing it all on.
Now I just want to see them like take all of these like different children's shows and turn them horror. I want to see like the Alvin and the Chipmunks Slaughterhouse movie.
Alvin!
Exactly. Let's do that.
I like that idea a lot.
Why does Alvin wear the red outfit?
Doesn't show the blood. We got a couple of news stories with some sad news. One is a kind of death. It's was reported just after we recorded, I think like a day or two. The Opportunity lander on Mars, NASA has officially declared it dead, which is it's a sad thing. This thing was designed to go about 90 days and about 1,100 yards. That's all they were really expecting out of it. And this thing ran for over 14 years, almost 15, and covered, 28 miles with this little thing going, I think it was like less than 1/10 of a mile a day or something. It's really slow.
Yeah.
So this thing is just trugged along. You know, I've talked about this, you know, with like the Voyager spacecrafts and things like this. Whenever we build something and we got, okay, it's going to last about this long, and then it just keeps giving us information and keeps working. And it's something that we've sent into space. We've landed on another planet, and it still does what it was designed to do years after its expected lifespan. I love those stories, and it just makes it kind of like sad when it finally does stop.
End of an era.
Yeah. I mean, its sister rover Spirit lasted about 5-6 years, I think, as well, which I imagine it probably had the same amount of lifespan expected of it, but I think it stopped functioning in 2011. I almost had passed away. It stopped functioning in 2011, and so Opportunity lasted even far and beyond that. And its last communication was early June, and the last communication could be was the technical equivalent of "my batteries are low and it's getting dark." Mm. It's like it almost brings a tear to your eye.
Yeah, it knew it was going.
Yeah. So they've made thousands of attempts since then to try to reconnect and try to get it to respond, and they've gotten no response from it. So they finally declared it done. The mission is over, which just leaves one more rover on Mars, which they landed just a few years ago, I guess, just 2-3 years ago. Mm. But they were saying that this little rover that kept going and the information that they got from it is going to help, you know, when we finally put a man on Mars, they're going to be there because of the Opportunity rover. So I think it's very cool. I got a kick out of it, and it was like, you know, sad day. You know, yes, we project emotions on just machines, but
I feel
can't
like
help it.
There's a movie to be told there, you know, all from the rover's point of view, and it ends on that last message.
It'd be kind of like a WALL-E sequel or something like that. Now, an actual passing, I'm afraid. Peter Tork of the Monkees has passed away at the age of 77. He was diagnosed with a rare tongue cancer about 10 years ago, but I think about in 2013 or so, they said that the cancer was clear. He had fought the cancer and he was clear from it. But so at the time that the article I was reading, there wasn't any specifics about why, you know, what he passed away from, but I'm assuming that had to do something with the cancer. He was only 77 years old. He was the oldest member of the group The Monkees when it premiered in 1966. On NBC. The then 24-year-old helped spark Monkey Mania with the offshoot of merchandise, top-selling music, tour tickets, and the TV show. It ran for 2 seasons and actually won an Emmy for Outstanding Comedy. He penned the tune for the band's 1968 movie Head, which features cameos from the likes of Dennis Hopper, Frank Zappa, and Jack Nicholson, who wrote the film allegedly while tripping on LSD.
Yeah.
We have been begged to cover the movie Head on the podcast.
I like that movie. I love that movie.
Have you seen it? I have never seen it. I've always wanted to.
So it was my wife grew up watching the Monkees, like on reruns and whatnot,
yeah.
and then, you know, just sort of stopped. But she was a huge fan. And then when Davy Jones died, it kind of reignited her love for the Monkees. And I had heard of the Monkees, but I didn't know anything about them. So she starts rewatching the show. She went out and bought the whole thing on DVD and then got it again on Blu-ray, and then she bought Head, and then when we watched that, I was like, this is a brilliant movie. And that's what really turned me on to them. And so I got into the music, I got into the show, I saw them in concert 3 times.
Nice.
I am a Monkees fan.
All right, nice.
So when I heard about Peter Tork's passing, like that kind of like tore me up for a bit, and I was like, oh no.
Yeah, I grew up watching the Monkees too. It was, you know, this just the thing that would show up, and it was obvious when it went into like syndication or whatever, is always they use it to fill airtime on the local UHF channels and everything. So I remember watching it. It'd be interesting to go back and watch it today. I don't know. Yeah,
you see it differently. They knew what they were doing. They knew what they were getting away with. It, yeah.
And it's almost, actually, the Monkees kind of ties in a little bit pretty well with the movie we're going to be talking about here later, and the whole idea, the kind of manufactured band. Yep. I mean, it was really, I'm thinking that's kind of ahead of its time. I mean, now I think that is probably majority of what we see when we see the boy bands and the girl bands right. and the pop music and everything. Mm-hmm. They are studio created.
Yeah.
And the Monkees kind of, they're probably the first. If
among,
not
among the first.
Among, yeah.
Yeah, and the thing is that, like, when the Monkees were put together, you had Davy and Mickey, who were kind of like the actors, and then you had Mike and Peter, who were the musicians, and then it was Mike and Peter who were pushing to, like, actually have some creative control, and, like, mm-hmm. we know how to play instruments.
Yeah.
We know how to write songs. Can we do that? And they were the two that really got that to happen. And then I think Head is the only album they have in which no one... Oh, no. There were a few other songs that people did. There's some album where, like, nobody wrote songs but them. Things like that. So, yeah, they were... and I always said that I felt that Peter Tork was the most creative one in the entire band. Worst singer,
yeah.
but most creative one. Best musician, wrote some amazing songs.
Yeah, he was the bass player. He wasn't really... Yeah.
Well, when he sang, it was just sort of like, ooh.
Yeah, it was a sad day. You know, both the Davy Jones passed away quite some time ago. Michael Nesmith and Mickey Dolenz are still around. They, of course, tweeted and shared their condolences and their memories of Peter. And it's sad. It's just, you know, we reach that point in our lives where all these people and the things we remember from our childhood are just slowly kind of disappearing. In you know, we all have, you know, the things, the memories that we have, we still have like those shows that we can go yeah. back, or movies that we can go back and watch and remember these people. But yeah, it was very sad. But that's all the news I had.
I have a few things. So Warner Brothers is getting in on the whole everybody needs a streaming service thing.
Of course.
So there's no date yet, but supposedly this year they're going to come out with Warner Media Streaming, which will include all the CW shows, CBS, the reruns of Friends, Big Bang Theory, and HBO.
They're going to put TBS out of business. That's all,
yeah.
That's like all TBS shows.
Supposedly they're pulling everything that they have on other streaming services to put it on this, like once those contracts run out. So like
wow.
everything that's on the CW that's on Netflix, supposedly that's coming out. Everything that's, you know, I know they have like CBS All Access. I don't know how that's going to work. I don't know if that's going to close or if that's going to be part of it. But they said like, oh, if you already have HBO by itself, if you get this, that's a package deal.
Gotcha.
So it's like, that's a big library. That's actually something to compete with.
There's a lot of stuff. It'd be interesting to see if Warner will take a lot of the stuff that's in their archive, you know, the Warner Archive, whether they'll make that available for streaming, because they got some great stuff. Every yeah. once in a while, they'll decide to go, oh, and we'll release this on DVD, you know, real quiet. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, my God, that's a thing everyone's been waiting, or Blu-ray or whatever.
Yeah.
Be interesting to see if that if that library becomes streamable.
Right. And then they also have like the DC streaming stuff. I'm like, are you going to just put it all together? Put it under one roof and become a giant.
Make it worth whatever price tag you put on the service.
Like if you're all under one umbrella, why do I have to pay for that, that, and that?
Yeah, because we don't get HBO. So if it's something that we wanted to do, we'd have to buy the stream, or you know, we'd have to actually buy for the streaming service individually.
Right.
So, but yeah, you got to make it. You put enough on there, Warner would probably be the one that would really, truly tempt me, because there's so much in the Warner Brothers hands that, you know, there's a lot of other studios that have things that are like, yeah, that'd be nice, but Warner Brothers has a lot.
They have a lot, both on TV and in movies.
Yeah, yeah, there's some old classic movies and television that fall under the Warner Brothers umbrella that, you know, would be great to just have instant access to.
Right. So, yeah, they got a shot at this.
Mm-hmm. That'd be if any service was worth, you know, spending $10-15 a month.
It'd be that one. I've thought
for me anyway.
And if they're pulling that much off of Netflix, I'm thinking like, do I want to keep Netflix? That's kind of a lot of what I watch.
Yeah, I just saw a friend of mine on Facebook or something was just saying that Netflix raised their price again on them.
They always announce that. I think I remember hearing them a couple months ago saying that they were going to be raising the price. It's always like, you know, a few cents here, a buck there. It's never like, oh, we went up $8. It's always like we went up like 85 cents, something like that. You know, and it makes sense. They're trying to put out more original content. They're going to have some serious things to compete with.
That's going to be interesting. I mean, we've talked about before what the future of television and entertainment is going to look like. We were talking about things like Netflix and, you know, services that have all these. And yeah, it's starting to where it looks like what we connect with, oh, we'll go and watch it on Netflix because it's some old show or some old movie. It's going to be a little bit less that and more of their own. They're just turning into networks.
Right.
You know.
Well, now it's also becoming interesting because they're becoming networks, but it's also now who's got the better library.
Mm-hmm.
That was an argument I didn't see coming, because now you've got like, oh, here's the Warner library. Here's the Disney library. Netflix, you don't have a library. You just started.
Right.
So you don't have like nostalgia heartstrings to pull on, whereas, you know, Warner and Disney can do that. So that's why they keep investing in all this original content. A lot of it, not good. If you go look up like the ratings for these things, like the reviews for these things, a lot of it is like some bottom shelf stuff. And it's just, they just need stuff. They're trying to build a library just so they can say, well, we've got all this. It's like, I've looked at it. I'm not impressed.
It's interesting that Netflix kind of created the technology. And the stream, you know, the idea of the streaming service really comes from Netflix. And now that technology is looking like it could potentially put them out of business.
Yeah.
That it's interesting. Oops. Yeah. 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 I'd be curious. I think it's going to be a whole nother landscape and another, I was going to say 20 years, but I don't even know if I'd give it that long. The next decade. Yeah. 5-10 years. It's the entertainment landscape is going to be unrecognizable from today. Yeah.
So some trailers dropped in the last couple of weeks. This first one is a movie that I swear I think like an 11-year-old wrote. It's called Yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about a guy. It's set modern day. He's a struggling musician, a guitar player. You know, he just works at like local clubs, can't get a gig. He's cycling home one day. All of a sudden, power across the entire planet goes out. He hits a car. He wakes up, power's come back on, and for whatever reason, he's the only person on Earth who can remember the Beatles, and nobody else remembers the Beatles, as though the Beatles never existed. Mm-hmm. He starts playing the songs, and people are like, oh, that's really nice. Like, yep. Who wrote that? It's like, Paul McCartney? Who? And this trailer really annoyed me, because I'm like, you can't tell me the world would look anything like it does today if the Beatles never existed. You culturally, musically, like there's a part where someone's like, oh, you know, like that was a good song. You know, it's not anything by Coldplay. I'm like, Coldplay wouldn't exist if there were no Beatles. Ed Sheeran's in this movie as himself. I'm like, Ed Sheeran would not have a career if there were no Beatles. The ripple effect is too great.
Right. I see your point there.
If the movie, like, if it wants to just be like this fun, weird what if thing, but again, it's like a kid wrote it. It was like, imagine if I was the only one that knew about the Beatles, I'd be instantly famous. And I'm like, would you?
Well, you you just got to use the imagination that, you know, there was obviously some other band or singer that was the influence rather than the Beatles.
Would there have been a British invasion?
Yeah, that's a good question.
Would that form of music come here? Plus, do those lyrics, would they be accepted today?
Well, maybe the Beatles didn't, but maybe it was the Rolling Stones.
I mean, there were the Rolling Stones, but could the Rolling Stones have done culturally by themselves?
In this world, maybe it did.
Nah. I'd rather see something explored where
it's a fantasy, like, Matt.
I'd rather see the fantasy explored of imagine if there were no Beatles and what does the world look like? Because again, these are lyrics that are born in the 60s of a bunch of guys who were raised in a post-World War II society. Are those lyrics accepted in the 21st century? They're accepted now because we've always had them. They're part mm-hmm. of culture. But brand new, does I Want to Hold Your Hand get picked up by a studio?
Yeah, that's the toughest part for that I could get from this trailer was the idea that he starts singing and recording these songs.
And everyone loves them.
And everyone loves them under the big hit. And he is like the Beatles.
Right. They're trying to recreate Beatlemania in 2019.
But you're right. These songs don't work today.
Right.
Yeah.
With no history behind them.
Yeah. Well, unless you change them like the one clip. Okay, let's try it and say, "Hey, dude."
Right. So, everyone is like kind of on board with this movie, and I'm sitting there like, you know, shaking my fist, like, "No, this shouldn't work. This shouldn't be a thing."
Yeah, it might be fun. It might be, you know, but yeah, I don't. I see your point, and it might be a fun, like, mindless flick to watch, but, you know, that's kind of one of those movies that's going to depend on the runtime for me, if I even want to bother watching it.
20 minutes. One person put up on Twitter, they started writing a few lyrics to a Smash Mouth song, and then they wrote somebody go like, "Hey, what's that? That's Smash Mouth." Who? From Universal Studios. I'm like, that would be a better movie. Yeah. Imagine if Smash Mouth never existed. Well, let's see. Society would be exactly the same. They're a much newer band, and that would be funny, seeing somebody trying to like recreate Smash Mouth, because why not?
Yeah. Yeah, we'll see about that one. I don't think... I think I'll pass on it.
I'll pass on it.
Yeah.
On principle.
Well, Beatles, you know, I certainly appreciate what they did. And there is a lot of their songs that I like, but I also think that they are extremely overplayed. And for me, I kind of get...
I can see
that. I can't listen to the Beatles all the time.
Sure, I understand that. But what they did culturally, I don't think can be duplicated.
No. It's like I said, I appreciate what they did and their place in history and music and everything. But it's kind of like, so I'm good with them, but yeah. I wouldn't even consider myself really a fan.
Sure.
So yeah, definitely not a film for me.
The other trailer was the Octavia Spencer horror movie, Ma.
Yes, I just saw this. You told me about it. I hadn't heard about it. I had nothing until you just told me about it.
It's a Blumhouse horror movie, which are coming out with some good horror movies. When I saw this trailer, I kept thinking, like, in a few years, Christopher should have his son sit down and watch this. Have him and his friends come over and curb them away from, you know, drinking and listening to strangers.
Yeah, for anyone who hasn't seen it, the whole premise is just a bunch of high schoolers get this woman, Octavia Spencer, to buy him some liquor, to buy him some beer for him. And then she suggests, well, you wouldn't need a place to party. I got this great basement. You come just hang out, party here. And it turns into like the place to go party for teens in the town. And then, then it all goes mad.
And I love horror trailers that start out fun and upbeat, and then all of a sudden one thing happens, and then the violin strings kick in, and then it gets creepy, and all of a sudden it's like, you know, you can party in the basement, don't go upstairs. One of them goes upstairs, and then all of a sudden she's like, "Where are you guys? We're supposed to party tonight. How did she get our phone numbers?"
Mm-hmm.
And it just gets worse and worse, and I'll watch Octavia Spencer in anything, but I really want to see her in a horror movie.
I was going to say, this is the first time she's dived into the horror film,
isn't
it?
She's always done, like, comedy or, you know, she just recently got into, like, some drama. Well, no, she's mm-hmm. been in drama for a bit,
yeah,
but I always see her in comedies a lot. And, I really want to see her do this.
Yeah, this one's going to be fun. And it's going to be fun to see if she does any, talk show tours or whatever, because I think it's going to be fun hearing her talk about
making a horror film.
Yeah, I'd like to get her take on it.
I love how open-ended the trailer was, because there was never a part in the trailer where it's like, we have to fight back or we have to get away. It's just sort of like things just keep going further and further south. And I'm like, Ma could kill them all. Maybe mm-hmm. they kill Ma. Maybe she takes a few out before they take her out. I don't know. This could go so many ways. Great trailer.
Yeah, you really – is this – kind of a psychological, is it going to be kind of a slasher, is right. it going to be a little bit of both? Uh-huh. You know, this trailer really doesn't tell you, you know, just kind of get just enough to really like
Amps, yeah.
Yeah, I liked it.
And then there was a trailer sticking with psychological horror for the reboot of The Twilight Zone that Jordan Peele is show running. Have you seen anything for that?
I have not.
So he's a huge Twilight Zone fan. He's a huge fan of Rod Sterling, and you know he's doing the whole like introduction, like right. there's a place beyond space, and he's doing his own voice, but he's throwing in a little bit of Sterling to it, to the point where I'm like, he kind of sounds like him.
All right,
and you know it's gonna do the whole episodic kind of thing, each story is individual and all that, and the trailer looked really great, and it kind of looks a little bit like Black Mirror, but I think it's still going to stay in that Twilight Zone thing of this is very grounded, this stuff could happen, and then they'll throw in a little bit of sci-fi to be like, or maybe this is what happened, and right. that kind of thing of like where, they go
so
to
this is
going to
be this is going to be a series. This is like yeah. the old Twilight Zone, just encapsulated individual stories.
Yeah.
See, I'm really curious to see how that plays out in today's audience. I think it'd be fantastic. What I would think would be awesome is that it gives it a chance for maybe this is the time for, yes, you get some named filmmakers or get some name stars, but this is also would be a great avenue to like get some unknowns or up and comings.
Yeah.
To kind of get their feet wet and, because we were talking before about, needing the new blood, new directors, female directors and everything last time. What better avenue
sure.
than, okay, it's not going to cost a lot of money. We'll give you a couple hundred thousand or something for this story. Tell it tight, 40 minutes and out, done. What can you do? What a great way for some up-and-coming directors and, actors to cut their teeth.
Yeah. The trailer showed a lot of faces that I recognize, but I'm sure that's for trailer purposes.
Sure.
And Jordan Peele is one of those people who really wants to, like, diversify Hollywood and, mm-hmm. and filmmaking, so I can see him doing a lot of that, of like, the trailer had all these faces you know, but there's going to be a lot of faces you don't know that you're going to learn. There's going to be a lot of writers that you're going to learn. There's going to be a lot of directors that you're going to learn.
Which is really what the original Twilight Zone did, too. I mean, we go back and we see all these actors and like, oh, yeah, well, that's Shatner and that's this guy and that's this woman and everything. But, yeah, they weren't them mm-hmm. when they did the Twilight Zone.
Yeah.
So I think that'd be a perfect place for to really see some new talent. So, yeah. Curious to see how it does. I mean, especially because it's not going to be a through story or anything.
Yeah.
It's just going to be the beginning, middle, and end all in that, mm-hmm. 1 hour of programming.
Yeah.
So it'll be really interesting to see how it does.
Yeah. And
I'm hopeful for it. I mean, they've tried rebooting the Twilight Zone before back in, was it the 90s?
I know they did that Twilight Zone movie.
They did the movie, but I thought they'd tried to do another series.
Oh, I don't know.
I could.
Oh, that sounds familiar. Yeah. I like remember the opening credits.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think the success of Black Mirror is probably what allowed this, because that's a very Twilight Zone-esque. It just got harder and harder into its sci-fi.
Mm-hmm.
Where I know there's a lot of sci-fi episodes of the Twilight Zone, but I always love the ones that were more grounded. It's just like the guy's on a plane and he thinks there's something on the wing. Is there? Isn't there?
Yes.
Kind of thing. Like, we've all been there. We've all been on planes and we freaked out.
No, I like the ones that are just the odd mysteries.
Yeah.
There's one where a woman goes to a shopping, to a store, and she just gets this weird feeling and everything. And she ends up getting pulled into this upstairs a room, and it turns out that she's a mannequin.
Yeah.
And every mannequin gets like a month to go out and live in the world, and she forgot that she was a mannequin, and it was, her time was up, and John over here has been waiting for a week, and it's like that's the kind of like weird twisty stuff that I love the Twilight Zones for.
Yeah.
So yeah, it'll be very interesting to see the stories that they come up with this. I'm curious. Now, is this going to be a network? Is what I'm going to
CBS All Access is what it was being advertised for.
Of course it is.
Right.
Yeah.
Again, will that be on the Warner streaming thing eventually?
Yeah.
Hopefully.
Well, something like that. I mean, keep it up, CBS. The new Discovery wasn't enough to get me to pay for your access, and there isn't really. I can watch Hawaii Five-0 for free on network. Yeah, I don't need to pay for it. So yeah, keep doing stuff like that, like Twilight Zone.
You've got two things.
Now I got two things that maybe
get to three, and we'll talk.
Yeah, no kidding.
So last trailer, Netflix original movie, The Highwaymen. Starring Woody Harrelson and Kevin Costner as the two Texas Rangers who are tasked to track down Bonnie and Clyde. And the thing that really got me is it had a rating,
mm-hmm.
an MPAA rating of rated R.
Yes.
It's begun.
Yep. Is this, do you know, well, it's the first time we've seen anything for Netflix to put a rating on it since they've joined the MPAA. I don't know if it's literally the first thing. So it's interesting, and it looked like a pretty interesting trailer.
Yeah.
It's Woody Harrelson and Kevin Costner. I think they're actually, the older they get, the more I like to watch them.
Sure.
There's just something about as they get older, the older actors, the way they have to play their roles, I like them more.
Sure.
than when they were younger.
Right, because Woody Harrelson was like the comedian, and I'm always playing the dopey guy, too.
Right.
He gets more and more serious, and I love it as he gets more into that drama.
Mm-hmm.
So good.
Yeah. And Kevin Costner is a little bit the same way, where he was always the action hero or the romantic lead, and now he's just kind of like he's got to play the old and grizzled, and yeah, it's like, I like that better.
Yes.
that suits you.
Uh-huh.
It suits you even better than Bull Durham or anything else you've ever done.
When he pulls out a gun and he's like threatening someone, she's like, he's going to kill them.
Yeah.
I believe it.
Yeah, it looked pretty cool. I have to admit, I've never watched actual Bonnie and Clyde, the film Bonnie and Clyde, but I took that as being kind of taken from their point of view. So it's kind of neat seeing a film that's going to cover the other side.
Yeah,
looks like we definitely see some Bonnie and Clyde stuff going on.
Yeah. I've seen a lot of documentaries, so
sure.
I know how it ends.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. We all know how it ends. I've seen the car.
Right. What little was left.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think just the whole lead up is going to be an interesting thing of what pushes them to this extreme.
That's a very good point. Yeah.
Yeah.
What led to them finally going, just hide in the bushes, and when they drive by, open
blow
up.
Them away.
Yeah.
100 different ways.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, that's going to be real interesting.
Yeah.
Because I like how the whole thing started based on the untold true story.
Yeah.
Yeah, it'll be fun. I'm kind of looking forward to seeing that one myself.
Comes out in March.
Yeah, looking good. All right, is that all for the news and the trailers and everything? Awesome. All right, well, we'll take a break here, and when we get back, we're going to look at, I don't even know the year. What year did this come out?
2001.
2001's Josie and the Pussycats.
Aw, yeah.
Aw, yeah.
Feels good.
Feels good.
The time has come to enjoy myself.
Hello, greetings and hi there. This is the Head Speaks Podcast. Hey there, true believers. Welcome to the Task Force X Headcast. G.I. Joe! G.I. Joe, the Real American Headcast, is the code name for Aaron's daring, highly trained headcast.
1980. Hello there. My name is Aaron Moss, and this is the Starman Manhunter Adventure Hour.
Hello, my name is Alexis Mox. This is my show called Alexis Speak.
And all of these shows can be found on the Headcast Network. Look for it on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. Also on Facebook by looking for the Headcast Networks. all of the great headcasts that you love on one convenient feed. Look for it. The Headcast Network. See you there.
Okay, we are back. I kind of went into this film with maybe some expectations, trying not to put too much, you know. I didn't see it when it came out, never saw it up to this point, figuring it was just this fluff film based on these cartoon characters, which are based on comic book characters. The last thing I was really expecting this film to do is actually have a good message.
And
this is a film that, like I said, I hadn't watched it for, let's see, what is it, 2019 now? So it's been 18 years since it came out, thereabouts. Didn't realize how much I needed this film in my life.
That's great.
I actually really enjoyed this film.
It's so good.
It is so much fun. I'm really kind of shocked that it was a box office bomb from what I read.
Massive bomb.
They spent about $40 million and it made like 14. Yeah.
Yeah, no one went and saw this movie.
Critics really slammed it hard. I was really disappointed. I saw that Roger Ebert.
Half a star.
Like one and a half stars or something like that. It was really low. And he says that they're not as dumb as the Spice Girls, or they're not dumber than the Spice Girls, but they're as dumb as the Spice Girls.
I don't think he got it. I think a lot of people
I was like so disappointed when I read it. So I'm thinking Ebert could not have watched this movie. I don't understand it. He's usually, Siskel and Ebert were always the critics that I kind of relied on the most for like the honest reviews, because they were the ones that were paying for their own ticket, mm-hmm. going to the theaters. They weren't getting DVDs from studios. They weren't going to the gala events. They were paying their own money and going to the movie, sitting in the theater and watching the movie. But I'm like, was he like, did he have the flu? Was he sick that day? I don't understand. I don't think he could have watched this movie.
Yeah, a lot of people said a lot of the same things of, you know, oh, it had all of this stuff about, you know, product placement, but then it's filled with product placement. I'm like, that's the joke.
Yeah.
I don't think you got the joke. This is a comedy.
Right.
And I think the joke went over people's heads.
Well, actually, there's a lot of levels to this film, but one of them was the ridiculous product enforced and product driven life, or not industry. Life industry that the music industry had become. And yeah, and so the fact that there is a label on every surface everywhere in this movie
is so funny.
It is hysterical. And apparently the filmmakers didn't get any endorsements from anybody. They just did it. And I loved the whole thing. And then of course they incorporate the old subliminal message trope in there, which I think is hilarious. The changing teens' minds and why. And
the clothing keeps changing.
Yeah.
I love it.
Orange is the new pink. Ah!
And then everyone's wearing blue. Then everyone's wearing leopard print.
It was one of these movies that I thought maybe someday I would watch it, if no other reason than I'll admit to having a little bit of a crush on Rachel Lee Cook.
Oh, who didn't?
Yeah. I saw her on in She's All That, which is another underrated film, I think.
Yes.
I thought maybe I'd get around, but never. I just never did.
Well, now you have.
Now I have, and my crush is still solidly in gear.
Rachel A. Cook, Rosario Dawson, and Tara Reid. All three are great in this film.
It's probably the only film where I watched the entire film and liked Tara Reid.
She's so good.
I really don't care for her much, and I can't think of anything else I've seen her in that I actually went,
Sharknado.
Yeah.
Sharknado.
Yeah, no. Didn't, no. No, this film is like, oh, this is the part that was made for you.
Yeah.
A little bit of a synopsis, maybe. Do you want to take it? You're better at these than I am.
Sure. So, you know, it's based on the Josie and the Pussycats comic book. So mm-hmm. It's these three friends. They're in a band together of Josie, Val, and Mel. And they're from little nowhere town Riverdale. And they have dreams of being rock stars. And I keep thinking, like, it was so clever that they kind of took a script that had nothing to do with Josie and the Pussycats, that you could have made any movie around this
sure.
idea. But then they take this idea of it's set, you know, for then modern day, so it's set in early 2000s, and there is this other band, Du Jour. This
I love Du Jour.
Fabricated
boy band.
With Seth Green, Breckin Meyer, and I can't remember the other two
Donald
guys.
Falson.
Yes.
From Scrubs. I saw him. I'm like, oh, yes, this movie already gets extra points. And then they disappear. I'm like, what?
And did you notice the song they were singing at the beginning?
Backdoor Lover.
Backdoor Lover. Right there. That tells you what kind of movie you're in for. So DuJour is the next big band. But then all of a sudden they discover some weird hidden track on the background of their last album. And their manager, while they're up in their private jet, has their jet crashed, and he jumps out with the pilot and skydives, and he lands in Riverdale. And so he has to go find the next big band. And you find out that all of these bands are popular because of the subliminal messages in their music. And that's the track that DuJour discovered. So he signs the Pussycats.
Right.
Which they renamed Josie and the Pussycats to have a front person. And they put the subliminal messages in that track, in their songs. And one of the messages is the band is great, but it's also buy this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's all about discovering what the music industry is really up to and how it's corrupt and how it's trying to control the youth of America and how Josie and the Pussycats are the unlikely heroes to uncover and save America's youth.
Yep. That pretty much sums it up.
Yeah. It sounds terrible, but it's not.
No, it's not. You're right, though. It could be. And I wonder if that was a little bit of what kind of hurt the film upon release. Like you said, it could have been anybody.
Yeah.
I wonder if it kind of hurt the fact that they tagged the Josie and the Pussycats because everyone had the cartoon and the comic. And when this movie really wasn't either one of those, it was kind of like, why bother calling it Josie and the Pussycats? You know, so I'm not going to like the rest of this film because I don't see any reason why they call it Josie and the Pussycats. You know, is that where I wonder if that's where some of the critics kind of took issue. I don't know.
I just know that, you know, how else do you tell a Josie and the Pussycats story? Like, I never read the comics. I didn't watch the cartoon, so I don't know what is out there. I don't know what, like, is there good meat on those bones? I really have no clue. I felt like this is as good a story as any to tell with these three characters.
I got a big kick out of us. Occasionally, they would kind of break the fourth wall, or they'd be a little meta. There was one line like, why are you even here? And she's like, maybe because I was in the comics.
What? Nothing.
Nothing.
That's my favorite line in the whole movie. Love that line. Yeah, that's their manager and their manager's sister.
Sister, yeah. Why are you even here?
I was in the comic book. What? Nothing.
Nothing.
It's a great part. And then you have Alan M., who is a wonderful side character, Josie's love interest.
Mm-hmm.
He's great. When she doesn't show up for his show, I'm like, no.
Poor Alan M.
Poor Alan M. And the guy flushes the toilet.
Sorry, Adam 12. Yeah.
that was great.
Yeah, no, I love their... you see them get all these guys on their first gigs. The first gig, you see Josie, or you see the Pussycats play, and they're playing, they're rocking out and everything, and it turns out they're just on some stage at the end of a bowling alley, and no one's paying attention. We need Elaine now.
And the shoes.
Yeah, they got
$20. Yep. All right.
Minus $5 shoe rental. Oh, $15 each.
Five. It was clever.
But then, of course, the Tara Reid's character's back there. Yeah, Smiley. Awesome. She's just perpetually happy.
But then you find out, like, she's playing that, like, ditzy blonde, you know, isn't aware of what's going on. But then you find out she's ultra aware of what's going on, where it's like, did you notice anything weird about Wyatt? You mean how he kept folding his napkin because he's worried that nobody likes him and he just really wants a friend and he's worried that everybody's just taking advantage of him? No.
Yeah, that. But I was thinking more about the music stuff, the contract.
And then you find out she can fight. Like, she knows karate. And she beats up the guards. And you're just sort of like, she might be the best character.
Yep. I don't think any characters were bad characters in this. It was incredibly well cast. Parker Posey as their main villain.
Fiona
is incredible.
Alan Cumming as Wyatt.
Oh, my gosh.
So good.
The best scene... I think one of the best scenes, I don't know, this was one of these things where it is so creative. I don't know how anyone comes up with the idea that, you know, he's driving along, he's in Riverdale, he's trying to find it, like, where the heck am I? They're not just going to drop out of the sky. Then suddenly the Pussycats are right in the middle of the street. He slams on the brakes. He sees them. He takes a CD cover, a clear CD case, and holds it up. So they're like framed in there. It's like
number one band in the world.
Yeah, they carry the sign. Someone's carrying the sign back behind him. It's a great. It's like, who comes up? Where does that come from? That is a brilliant scene.
So it was written and directed by Harry Elefant and Deborah Kaplan, and this is the last thing that they would direct.
That's such a shame.
Probably because it bombed so hard.
Such a shame.
They have. I feel there's a lot more for them to do, because they also wrote and directed Can't Hardly Wait, the very 90s movie with Jennifer Love Hewitt. And I think they have some really funny jokes in there. Great sight gags. Yeah, I want more from them.
Oh, absolutely. It's been long enough. Bring them back. Give them a second shot, because they can. They got talent there. They can do something. Yeah, I watched this last night. It was a first time watch. And yeah, almost immediately, as soon as the band du jour comes out, I'm like, oh, the band. Band du jour, yes. Band of the day, yeah. I knew exactly where they were going. It's kind of like it pretty much sets the stage really quick. Then the fact that they get the, you know, I don't know, maybe, you know, like to me, Seth Green just seems like one of those really great guys that shows up in cameos, but maybe, I guess in 2001 he wasn't really his thing. Robot Chicken, I don't think, had even been created yet.
No, I think this is what put a lot of them together, because... Mm-hmm. Seth Green and Breckenmeyer work on Robot Chicken together. Rachel Leigh Cook still does voice parts on Robot Chicken. I think this is just where a lot of those guys got together. And then, I guess, Austin Powers had come out at that point, right? Like 99?
I believe so.
So he was at least in that. But yeah, his career was just getting started. But what did you think of that whole first scene of du jour in the plane? Arguing with each other and
I actually, when I'm sitting there, I'm watching that
he's taking my face, he's doing the face.
Well, sorry, I took your face. Am I taking your face now? What about now? We'll get you a new face.
Your mama couldn't give you a good face.
du jour means family.
Du jour means friendship. Du jour means seatbelts. Because yeah, they discover the hidden track. We don't hear it right away,
no.
But they play it for Wyatt, and Wyatt is like at the center.
I don't know
this.
What that is. Interesting.
And then he goes,
I'll be back.
Yeah, goes to the pilot, take the Chevy to the levee, and I'm like, oh!
That was a dark line.
And that's the other thing, is this movie wasn't afraid to go to those places.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, they definitely took some chances there with the...
It landed for me. I thought it was a good joke. Harsh, but good.
Yes.
So, yeah, the plane vanishes, and I kind of do and don't like the payoff of how they survived, because they come back, three of them, because there's four members, three of them are in, full body casts, and you find out they lived, because they landed the plane at a Metallica concert.
And, yeah, got their asses kicked.
But one of them looks okay, because you find out he knew the lyrics to Enter Sandman. Then they try to save the day, but then they all literally just fall over. And then that's it. That's the joke. I'm like,
yeah.
So they were alive this whole time for one more joke, and then that was it.
Yeah.
They needed something else.
Yeah, maybe. They needed to explain the shadowy figure in Val's shower.
Mel's.
Mel's, yeah. And Mel's shower.
Where the music.
Writing the message. But other than that, although, you know, honestly... They could have just left that open.
Yeah.
I don't care. In this film, it wouldn't have mattered.
Or you didn't need the shadowy figure.
Yeah. It wouldn't have mattered whatsoever. No, I couldn't believe that all the characters and the actors were just phenomenal. Mm. You know, they where they needed to be, well, they're all over the top, and they were supposed to be.
Yes.
And it worked incredibly well. The idea that the music industry now, you know, this corporation or whatever is actually looking to sell their product to the government.
Yes. And other governments.
And other governments, around the world. Because of what they can do.
That whole reveal of this is what we've been working on. We decide what the trends are. We decide, what happens. And what happens if
the new buzzwords.
Yeah, what happens if the musicians, find out what you're doing? Ever wonder why musicians die young in plane crashes of drug overdoses? We've even created a hit TV show to explain all this. MTV's Behind the Music. Who looked at Behind the Music and thought, I bet there's a conspiracy joke in there? So funny.
the same people that come up with the Chevy to the Levee.
Oh, man. That's one of the most creative things I've ever seen on film.
Mm-hmm.
Just to take all of this real world stuff and be like, like that's what the story is really written around, is reality. And then it's just put to this extreme.
And I like that, you know, despite the fact that they kind of set it in the real world, they still give it kind of an unworldly edge, a lot in the way of how people, the costumes and stuff that they design for, like, the Pussycats or whatever. There was a behind the music special on the DVD that I had, and they're talking about the costume design. They definitely took a lot of influence from the 70s, but they all gave it sort of that modern kind of twist and everything to make something that you don't see anywhere else.
Yeah.
And I really liked that. I thought that was fun. It gave the world a sort of, yes, it's our world, but maybe not.
Yeah. And I felt like every time it did that, cause there were even parts like in the music and the way it was like being shot and the bright colors, and it almost felt like Burton. And I wonder if it pushed that a little bit further, because there are parts like when the conspiracy is getting revealed and you just hear like, I'm like, that's like out of Edward Scissorhands. like if you just went a little bit further and made that like permeate throughout the whole film, I think you really could have had something that everybody would have glommed onto.
Yeah, maybe. Although I would be afraid of it going taken a little bit too far down the darker route. I think it needed to be kind of still needed to be light and poppy.
I think it could have been light and poppy just with that whole, like, just out of the center of our world feel was everywhere.
I get you.
The product placement was everywhere, but then it's just sort of like, well, they're just walking down the street in, like, jeans and t-shirt. Like, imagine if those weird outfits were everything.
Mm.
Everybody's fashion sense became that.
Gotcha.
And the world, like, just every, you know, just go as far with it as you can until you can't think of anything else to do with it.
I see. Yeah, good. Yeah, I can see what you mean. Yeah, so, yeah, so the, because right now the stars on our film are the only ones that appear to be in our film, and everyone else is
normal.
Yeah. Right. Gotcha. It's funny. I was always a big fan. I actually am a fan of Spice World.
Okay. I've only seen bits and pieces of that.
And I was thinking, you know, this is what Spice World tried to do, but it didn't quite make it.
Sure.
And so this one, I think, accomplished what Spice World tried to do.
What did you think of who the voice was for the subliminal messages?
Oh, the movie phone guy?
Mr. Movie Phone.
I'm not really familiar with the movie. I get the movie phone guy. Is that the guy that always gave the show times when you called the theaters? Yeah.
Or the scene where Fiona explains to all of, like, those government leaders, like, and whatnot, like, what they can do. And, you know, they're explaining what their big master plan is going to be. And the guy from the Pentagon is like, okay, those kids won't know what hit them.
Neither will you. What?
What'd you say?
Nothing. No, you did say something. You said something about neither would I. Neither would they. The kids, the teens, just highlighting my point. She does it like twice.
Yeah. Oh, okay. That was close. What'd you say?
That was close to a moment.
It's one of those scenes that you don't need, but I'm so glad it was in there.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Because it plays off. I mean, we've seen that kind of stuff 1,000 times.
Yeah.
And films and whatever. And it's fun when you turn it. It's very, you know, you mentioned Austin Powers. It's kind of the first Austin Powers. It's kind of the same sort of thing Austin Powers did a little bit.
Yeah.
So kind of just turns all the usual tropes and just kind of turns them on their ear a little bit.
Yeah. And then the reveal at the end that Fiona and Wyatt are two high school friends and they both just want to be the popular kids. And Fiona had the lisp the whole time. And Wyatt was an albino. an overweight albino.
Yeah, that was like a, what now?
Right, exactly.
I like Val, so the lesson is freaks should date freaks?
Yeah, you know, it's so cute in a creepy sort of way, sure, yeah.
Well, I like that. That was what Val takes, and then it was Mel was like, well, no, that everyone should just be themselves, and she actually finds the shinier and the better message and, okay. Thanks, Mel.
The other thing that I'll always love this movie for, it was kind of the big break for Rosario Dawson. She didn't really I don't know what she did before this movie, but she is one of my favorite actresses. She's great in everything. Every time she shows up in something, I'm like, yes, Rosario Dawson is in this.
She's another one who does a lot of voice work, too.
She does. She's been Wonder Woman a few times.
I was going to say, she's done some stuff for DC, for sure.
Yeah. You know, she's... I don't really care for Clerks 2, but I love her character in it.
I don't know if I ever got around to Clerks 2.
It's got a couple of good scenes, but overall, it's not Clerks.
Gotcha.
It's in color.
Oh, yeah, that doesn't work.
There's just one really good scene where one guy is breaking down why Lord of the Rings is not a good film trilogy.
Gotcha.
But, yeah, she's in it, and she's great in that, and, you know, she's in a bunch of things. She was in, you know, the Marvel Netflix shows as the recurring character, and she's great in that role. So, yeah, love this movie for getting her career going.
Yeah, there you go.
Because supposedly some big name musicians were up for the part of
They were talking
Beyonce.
Beyonce, they was looking at for one role, and there was
Aaliyah,
thank you.
And Lisa Left Eye Lopez
were
all up for this because it's an iconic role. It's, you know, it's a black rock woman musician. Let's go get like an actual like, you know, musician in this. But they gave it to the actress.
They were saying one I think Beyonce they said was just too quiet shy and reserved. Aaliyah was too I forget what they said about her. Yeah, it just wasn't right for the part. And Rosario comes in and she's just got that right edge to her. They're like, yep, that's her.
Yep. That's Rosario. One of my favorites.
And they said that the three girls got along great right from the start.
It looked like it.
And so they just became friends and just partied and had fun, and you know, and it shows in the videos and the stuff that they do.
Yeah, I'm sad that this is a movie that just didn't go somewhere.
Yeah,
I could have watched a franchise with these.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, it's a little shame we never got Josie and the Pussycats 2. Or 3 or 4 or a touring. That's another thing too. I thought it was really cool that they needed the girls. I mean, to effectively play their instruments, like several songs all the way through. None of them had any music talent whatsoever. They didn't know how to play anything. They taught them how to play. They took them to band camp, taught them how to play their instruments. Not well enough to like, when you hear the songs on the soundtrack, that's someone else. But when you see them on camera playing, that's them on camera playing.
Yeah.
I thought that was very cool. And Rachel Lee Cook didn't provide her singing voice, but she did provide background vocals.
Sure.
And then I guess the other two girls provided their own background vocals as well. So like, that's really cool that they took that extra step. Taught them all how to play. It's awesome. There's pictures and videos of like Tara Reid, their hand all band-aids and stuff and callus from the drumstick from drum practicing and everything.
She cared once.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Yeah, she actually cared about her career once.
And a lot of people say that this movie was kind of ahead of its time, and I'm not so sure about that because I feel like if it didn't come out when it came out, it would have been too late.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was.
I think it would have, if it had come out later, it would have been one of many.
Yeah.
I think it, I don't know, it wasn't ahead of its time. I think it kind of helped set the stage for some films to come.
Right. I agree with that. You know, I always hear people say, oh, ahead of its time. I'm like, it's not. It was perfect when it came out because it was right in the middle of, like, all of that MTV still going. Like, that was still very big then. It was kind of on...
TRL. Yeah. Sorry.
That stuff was kind of... You know, it wouldn't be much longer where that was like, really? TRL? You watch that still? Kind of thing.
Right.
So, yeah. It's just, I loved when it came out. I loved it when it came out because I think I saw it like right after it left theater when it like got onto like, you know, cable. Because I grew up in that MTV generation kind of thing, but I was never part of it. I didn't watch MTV, but I knew about it. I knew about the shows. My sister watched it constantly. So I always picked up on that stuff. So when something came out that mocked that, I felt very happy. That's why I've always identified with this movie. It's like, yes, that stuff's stupid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. You couldn't, it would make no sense. And maybe, and a lot of people today, you know, younger, who didn't grow up at all with the MTV or those type of shows or
wouldn't
the behind
it.
The music, they don't get the jokes.
No.
Carson who?
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. And yeah, who's this guy keeps who's this guy that he keeps doing impressions of?
Right.
Yeah.
What's movie phone?
Yeah. Yeah, it wouldn't work to any later. You're right. It needed to be right when it happened.
Right.
But like I said, I think that what it was doing and the type of humor and everything, it was really setting the stage. Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of films that came later that would do that same thing, and some of them ended up being more popular for some reason, but... Yeah, well, this is definitely one I really have to thank you for bringing it into my life.
To me, it was one of those, I felt like I was kind of rolling the dice on that, because I know a lot of people who don't like it. They watch it and they're like, yeah, that wasn't funny. It's either the jokes are going to land or it's not, or you're gonna kind of like, it's a time capsule too of that period. And you're either going to have good memories of when all of that happened and be like, oh yeah, that joke makes sense to me, or you're going to be like, I don't get why that's funny.
Yeah. Well, I'll even admit some of the MTV stuff, like the TRL and everything. I never watched any of that.
Sure.
I watched some MTV. Didn't have cable most of my life growing up, but go to friend's house or whatever. If I watched MTV, I'd watch it for some videos.
Sure.
But when it came to the actual like shows, this is actually back when MTV, I think, stopped being really what it was founded as,
right?
You know, it became less music videos and more
reality.
And yeah, I'm surprised there wasn't a real world mention or anything in this.
Could have had stars from the real world be like the hitman.
Yeah, really. That's what happens. That's what happens to them when they get voted off. They meet Carson Daly outside with a baseball bat. That was like kind of the latter end of MTV, I think, by the time you get to 2001. So, yeah, I was definitely out of the MTV watch at all. Definitely going to watch it again. I mean, this is going to be an occasional just throw in what the hell, watch it just because it can be that kind of film. If you want to sit there and pull stuff out of it, yep, you can do that. You want to just have it on in the background and have fun and enjoy the music, yep, you can do that. It is a damn fine soundtrack, too.
Yes, the music is good. It's fun. It's energetic.
When I posted that we were going to be watching it on the Facebook group, there's a lot of people that jumped in and were just like you that thought, you know, this was a great film. This was a much more subversive film than anyone had gave it credit for. The soundtrack is awesome. They still listen to the soundtrack. And I'm like, I can see why. I'm not sure if I could have Backdoor Lover blaring from the car, though, but I just skipped that one.
Or could.
Definitely highly recommend it. Gets the Time Shifter's stamp of approval. Definitely dig this one up. It's available on the few streaming services. You can find it on DVD or might be on Blu-ray now. I don't know. Definitely go and check it out. It's worth it. All right, well, that's going to do it for this episode. Thanks very much for joining us. We'll be back in another couple weeks. And until then, bye.